And that's why anyone listening, I will always say, like, if you know that you can do something, no one can ever take that away from you. It has to come from within. It can't be external. It has to be internal. Where are you at? Like, what are you doing? Like, you can't stay stagnant. Like, there's always opportunity to grow and be better, right? Like, she taught me a lot about how to relate to people and building relationships with people, because that is what ultimately in coaching is going to get your players to go through a wall, is the relationships that you have with them.
What's up, y'all? Welcome back to Shipped Across the Border. My name is Max. I'm here with Chris. And today we have on the head coach of the Elms women's basketball team, the first women's head coach we've had on our show.
Unless you count Stephanie Rudnick, because she wasn't a college basketball coach.
But also the Elms all-time leading scorer and rebounder as a player. Made a very big impact in her time here. And she's generous enough to give us her time and share her story. So thank you for coming on. This is Coach Parks.
Yes. Hi. Hi, everyone.
Before we go into like the background stuff, I kind of just want to give them a quick like debriefing and give us like an elevator pitch of who you are and what you've done in your basketball career.
So I'm originally from Fall River, Mass. I grew up playing outside, obviously. Like, well, I don't know nowadays if that's still a thing, but
I did it.
Yeah. So like I grew up playing outside with like boys and everything. And then I think I was in like third or fourth grade where my cousin, he's 6 months younger than me. His mom like signed him up for organized basketball, and I was like, oh my gosh, like I want to play or whatever, but I like missed the deadline or whatever. So I had to wait until the next year, and I was in fifth grade, which is very late because most kids start playing when they're in second, sometimes even first. Oh, wow. That's late. Late bloomer. But yeah, so I started playing, and it was co-ed at the time. It was like a big change though, because going from playing outside is completely different from playing organized basketball, right? So I looked like I had two left feet out there compared to when I was outside, you know, playing with my cousin and the other kids or whatever. And then in sixth grade, they like moved away from it being co-ed. So it was just like all girls. And that's kind of when I found like my rhythm, and I was like, wait, I'm actually good at this. So then from there I gained confidence and I fell in love with playing basketball.
Was there any influences before you started playing basketball? Like, did your parents play basketball? Did you have friends' parents that played basketball but sort of led you to play the sport?
Yeah, so, like, I would say my father, he played basketball, but I didn't really know. And then as a kid, like, when I was in elementary school, he would play, like, in men's leagues outside, like, where we grew up or whatever. But I really didn't know his story when it came to basketball. I didn't know that he was, like, a phenomenal basketball player until, like, later on.
Did he play in college?
No, he did not. Okay. He was like a star in high school, though. Mm. Yeah, he played at South Boston.
So when you say you started to see some confidence and some natural ability in that, like, what is like the nitty gritty? Like, what were you good at when it came to basketball?
What is your game? Like, scouting report for yourself.
At what age?
Because, when you started to see confidence, like around grade six, you said.
Yeah, so I would say literally because I was the tallest person, believe it or not, back then, they would just throw me the ball and I would just throw it into the hoop. Like that was literally all I did. And then I would just grab every rebound because I was the tallest one. But eventually that was no longer the case. I became short. So I had to figure some things out, because when you're younger, you kind of establish what your position is going to be. Like, you know, Angel Reese was a point guard all her life until she went to college.
I did not know.
Yes. Like, so that's why she was so shifty as a forward, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, I'm what, 5'5", 5'6", taller than all the other girls. I've been conditioned to be a post player. So as I started to get older, it was like, wait, I don't know how to handle. I don't know how to shoot, right? So I had to develop those other things to separate myself.
Was college basketball in your sights at this point when you were in grade six, or was that like not even a potential
thought? No, I was just in love with the game. Like, I just loved playing, and I just knew I wanted to play any chance that I could. Mm-hmm. So,
at what point do you think you started taking it like seriously and that sort of flip switched?
Yeah, so when you speak of influences, seventh grade, I'm playing rec league basketball, and my phys ed teacher at the time, Brendan Kelly, he was very big into basketball, like whatever. He was from the city, came back teaching, and I used to always like hound him. I'm like, come to some of my games, come to some of my games. So then he comes to one of my games and he brings another gentleman with him. And I didn't know at the time, right? I'm like, I think I'm good, like whatever. So then the other gentleman ends up being my AAU coach. So he tells me about a league on Fridays. So I was only playing in one league and it was like Wednesdays. And then he was running a league out of the high school on Fridays. So now here I am, I go to tryouts at this league on Fridays and this is when I'm like, wait, I'm not the tallest person in the room. Like, there's 5'10", 5'11", and I'm like, how am I going to compete with this if I'm a forward? And they also play the same position, right? So that was a little intimidating. But from there, like, he saw me play in those Friday night league games, and then he invited me to come play for his AAU team. And at that time, I was playing on the B team. I wasn't even playing on the A team. And I didn't know that, right? So, like, that was like, oh, another opportunity for me to play. And but he was making me into a better basketball player. So that was like the most, the first and most influential person that I crossed paths with.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of similar to what happened to me, except at like a way later age. Because I didn't try for my first AAU team until I was 17. And I came in the gym and there was like Elijah Fisher, 6'8", dunking the ball. And I'm in here like, I'm from a 300-person town. I thought I was good at basketball. Now it's like, holy shit, I'm not good at all.
Right, right. Yeah. So yeah, it was very humbling.
How did your game kind of evolve? So you started off being a post player, mm-hmm. and then now in college, kind of how was your game and what was that like transition?
Mm. So from the seventh grade or whatever, my coach, I kind of lost contact with him eighth grade summer going into high school. And as a freshman, I didn't know, like, again, I'm the first person in my family, I guess you could say, like immediate family that played sports. So whatever, I'm in science class, ninth grade, and the varsity coach is in there. He's like, I was looking for you all summer. Like, where were you? We had a summer league. And I didn't recognize at the time that that would set me up.
How was he aware of you?
Because our city's kind of small. And I guess, you know, as a varsity coach, if you're doing your due diligence, you're going to be peeping out the talent that's coming in, right? So we had some dialogue, whatever, and then tryouts came. I didn't realize that me not being a part of the summer league team was going to affect me being able to play at the varsity level right away, right? Like, my best friend, she was 6 foot. She played on the summer league team, right?
You met her in high school or you knew her previously?
We met in eighth grade. We went to the same middle school.
So did you know that she was a part of the?
I did not know that. Okay. We didn't have cell phones like back then,
that's
right?
That's very interesting. So, that's very interesting to think, because I'm thinking like your best friend's doing this stuff and that you probably would have wanted to do if you were made aware of it. So that's, right. I guess that's, but it's a different time.
Yeah. So like we didn't really communicate and our bond grew as we went throughout high school, but we met in eighth grade. Long story short, freshman year was hard, but it taught me like the importance of putting in hard work. Like that's where I learned like, oh, I got to earn this. I got to work hard and it's rewarding when you do. Right. So I was playing JV and varsity as a freshman. And then I remember my AAU coach, he resurfaced, right? So that summer, I'm playing AAU with him, and I told him what my goals were. I was like, I want to be starting on varsity next year, which is, like, unrealistic. You know, like, you go from barely playing to want to start, right? But he was like, all right. So every practice, I was in the gym. He taught me how to be faster. He's like, in order for you to be fast, you have to keep up with the fastest person on his team. So I started doing that. And that's why I was so fast on the court. And he just helped me elevate my game so much. So that summer, I was also playing on the summer league team. And now as a sophomore, I am starting on varsity. And I am having an impact, just like I set out to do.
What was your kind of play style? Like, at what point did you transfer from, like, a forward to a guard?
I never did.
There's a big guard.
Combo guard?
No, I was a forward though my whole career.
Oh.
Undersized post player.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I had to learn how to maneuver because I was smaller. Okay. So I was like, okay, I need to start learning how to use my body. So okay. I was physically stronger than the other post players
so
that
you
I
were
was playing
against.
A post
player with guard skills.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Correct.
So then going into grade 11 and 12, what, how were you reaching out to coaches and what were you trying to do in terms of become a college basketball player?
At that time, this is crazy, but like I think most young athletes back then would think like, oh, D1, I'm going D1, right?
They still think that.
Right, but I had people around me telling me the truth. Mm-hmm. My coach, AAU coach, he helped us a lot with the recruiting process. And he was like, realistically, you'd play D2 at most. Like he was not saying we're going to UConn. You know, these are all the teams we're seeing on. I've always had real people around me. I'm grateful for that. That's going to tell me the truth. And so fast forward, whatever, like that summer of junior year, he always told us like, that's the biggest year. This is the year most college coaches are going to be on you, watching you, following you, all of that stuff. And that's when I started to be like, wait, I don't want to give this up, basketball. So have an opportunity to play at the next level.
Did that change the way you were playing the game? Because like usually when you're in high school, grade 9 and 10, you can kind of have this free-flowing game, but then 11 and 12, you kind of have to barrel down and like really focus on the basics and stuff that college coaches really want to see. Did you end up doing that or no?
No, I think I just stayed true to what who I was as a basketball player. Like my junior year was, I think this team, by the way, should be going into the Hall of Fame. But that was, we went the furthest. Like we went to the state finals that year. And I played a big factor in that. Like I was averaging a double-double as a junior in high school. Like, and we were playing some tough competition. I don't know if you're familiar with Durfee basketball, but Chris Herron, everyone knows Chris Herron. I hope y'all know Chris Herron. He has done an ESPN, 40-40 or whatever.
40-40.
Yep. But he is a public speaker now and he goes around cause he struggled with like some substance abuse and stuff, but he played for the Boston Celtics and he scored 2000 points in high school. So I came from a very well-known high school growing up. So, yeah.
So what did your recruitment look like coming out of high school?
How do you end up at Our Lady of the Elms College?
I had a significant amount of interest from many schools, some now in the GNAC that we play, and then some D2 looks or whatever. But I just remember coming off of AAU, and my mom opened up a letter from Elms College. Like, because back then, that was how you were receiving interest, was from in the mail. So my mom opens up this letter, and she's like, oh, you got another letter, whatever. And it was from Elms, and it, you know, whatever. Typical, we're interested in you. And I'm like, Elms? I never heard of Elms. I'm just going to be honest. I've never heard of the school. And I was on, so fast forward, my mom like helping me plan out visits to go on college tours. Mind you, she's never done this before, but she's a very bright woman. So she had some clue, like, these are the things you want to ask, like whatever. And so I was on my way to MCLA. To do an overnight, and my mom's like, oh, why don't we, you know, I think Elms is on the way. Why don't you stop on the way there and do a day visit? So at the time, I came, I watched the practice. I had been in contact with Coach Habacker.
Who, if I'm not wrong, is the coach of
Dean. Yes, right, she now coaches at Dean. Okay. And also former Coach Prue played for her as well here. So at the time, whatever, I had been in contact with her, and I had brought like a CD of me playing for some reason back then also. That's how we was handing out film. And so I like came, watched their practice, and my high school coach also contributed to the recruiting process. He would always say like, make sure you're going to go somewhere where you can have an impact and play and all this other stuff, right? So I'm watching them practice and I'm like, all right, cool, like whatever. So then I go to lunch with them, you know, typical day visit. But I remember on my way out after, because she let me spend time with the team, and she must have watched film, and she was like, do you want to do an overnight on the spot? And I'm like, no, I'm not doing it.
Candy, you had an overnight booked already, right?
But talk about recruiting, though. Like, she was a really good, she is a really good recruiter. And I was like, no, no, because at the time, whatever, 17, 18, not comfortable doing that.
Yeah.
So then, whatever, after that, went to MCLA, hated it. It was in the middle of nowhere. I was like, I know I'm not coming here. Yeah, I'm like, I'm not coming here.
Actually, funny story. The bus driver got lost on our way to MCLA, and it took us 3 hours to get to MCLA.
Oh, man.
We played them. It was insane.
Wow.
I remember looking up.
In the middle of nowhere.
15-minute drive. And I woke up 2 hours later. And I'm like, where are we? And then I checked, like, how far we were. And, like, we still have another hour and 15 minutes left. I'm like, did we, like, we stopped some while I was sleeping because I passed out on every single bus ride. Like, did we stop moving and like a majority of me sleeping? But no, you just got lost.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Definitely in the middle of nowhere.
When you say you watched the practice, was that your first interaction with college level basketball players, or had you been around that kind of environment before?
Yeah, that was my first interaction. I had been on visits, but it was only speaking with coaches.
Was that a bit of a shell shock for you? Like when you said in grade 6 you came to these tryouts, is that kind of the same feeling that you had when you walked into that tryout or that practice?
No.
No?
No.
You felt more confident?
Like I did. Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Just because of off the strength the year that we had during my junior year. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay. I was nervous. Don't get me wrong. Like, I don't know them, Ray. I was like, wait. I was a little intimidated because I'm like, college? I never thought that that was possible for me, if that makes sense. So one thing I could say is, like, Coach Habacker was on it. she was texting back then. She was going above and beyond compared to the other coaches that were trying to recruit me, and that played a big factor. And then also, I knew I needed small classrooms, that attention from your professors where they're going to know you and where I wouldn't get lost. So
that was why you decided to go to Elms, because it was small and you felt like you could.
Yes, the community. Yes, I knew I would be able to thrive.
Even like yesterday, we went to this Chamber of Commerce event in the library, mm-hmm. and like the conversations that we had with our professors, with Professor Garcia, who's our accounting teacher, and just
amazing
other professors, is very unique to smaller schools. I feel like at a bigger school, you wouldn't have those intimate relationships with professors or with faculty and staff, which is really, I guess, beneficial for like development
in general. Right. No, Amanda Garcia, by the way, is top tier.
No, she's the GOAT.
She's been here. No, she's helped me out a lot when I was an undergrad here. So,
her and Nancy Davis both.
Like, yes.
She was here greatest. When you were?
Yes.
Teaching?
Yes. Okay. The amount of times I used to be in the College Center with Amanda in the CAF asking her questions around accounting. Like, she was very accessible.
She played sports here, too.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
She played basketball and volleyball, she said.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought she was a three sport.
And softball.
Yeah.
But just like the things you get to know about the faculty and staff and people who are around campus, mm-hmm. like you wouldn't have those experiences.
We didn't have it in Madaya, say that for sure. Like in Madaya, was not this personal. Like, every time I see Nancy, she asks me about what I'm doing, it's internship, all this stuff. And it's like most people would not give enough of a fuck to ask those questions. Like,
Nancy's amazing. She'd been here. She came, her first year was my freshman year.
So before we get into your playing career at Elms, mm-hmm. something that I wanted to ask is mm-hmm. just, how do you think Elms as a whole kind of like embraced you? So we just talked about how Elms, like the community and the culture is awesome with the, you can get like, have personal relationships with teachers and get to know them on like a more mm-hmm. personal level. How do you think that has kind of like impacted your playing career and then your want to come and be a part of that community as a coach?
Yeah, I mean, being a student athlete here definitely impacted me in many ways as a person, especially from where I come from. And then it's just had a tremendous impact on my life overall. Like, I've changed a lot when I was here as a student athlete. And then it also opened up doors for me later on. But that's in part why I wanted to come back, was to give that same experience to the student athletes across campus, because it is a unique experience and you're not going to get it everywhere. Mm-hmm. Right. So.
And then how did your career pan out in terms of college basketball from freshman to senior year?
Elaborate.
Meaning like, so how did you play your first year, and then how did your role adapt?
Were you a dog
and,
right away, or?
I guess.
Were you, because obviously you scored over 2,000 points, mm-hmm. says it on the wall. Mm-hmm. Were you coming in, starting, averaging 20 right away, or kind of, yeah?
Yeah.
So talk about progression from freshman year to senior year, you talk about that and how you kind of started off versus how you finished, maybe team success.
Yeah, so as a freshman, I remember the first day that we walked into the gym and we were playing pickup. So we used to share the gym with the men. Obviously, like, mm-hmm. we got one gym on campus. We would split it and we would go, like, you know, we'd go side hoop to side hoop. And aside from me, I just remember walking in and we were playing. And I'm like, because I have a high IQ, I'm like, we're going to be good. Like, I remember saying that, because we had a solid point guard. We had some solid shooting guards. We had a solid forward who I was excited to play with. And we just had so many pieces. So I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, this team's going to be really good. Like, we're going to be good. And I just remember, like, the point guard, when we play in pickup, she just kept feeding me. And she's like, oh, you're tough, blah, 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 whatever. So then first tournament of the season, I will never forget this. We went up to St. Joe's of Maine, and they demolished us the first game. And I'm sitting on the bench, and one of my teammates is like, yeah, this is Elms basketball. We lose. And I'm like, no, that's not where, like, I'm not accepting that. I'm not taking that on, right? So then the next game, we played Simmons, I believe, and I had like 20 and 10 or something like that. And I was like, whatever. And then I was like, oh, so we won the game. And then we, like, from there on, it, like, progressed. And we went on, like, an 8 winning streak. And it was just amazing. That year was amazing.
You were starting right away?
Yes, I was a starter right away.
Did you develop into a leader right away for the team in that sort of sense as a freshman?
No, because we had amazing leadership on our team.
The seniors?
Yes, we had 5 seniors, and they were all phenomenal. All phenomenal. embraced me, embraced everyone. Like, they recognized, like, oh, okay, Dee's good. Like, she's going to help us. So, like, any opportunity where they were giving me something, I wasn't like, who are you to tell? I was taking it. I was soaking it all in because I knew I can learn from them. Like, one of them is Erica Murphy, who's also in the Hall of Fame. She was an outstanding athlete and person to this day. Still learn a lot from her, right? Like, and I just remember her be like, Dee, like, don't get mad. Like, do this instead. Like, and I'm taking it in. Like, okay, I got you. Like, and it progressed, and we won the championship that year.
So, you won the GNAC championship.
We weren't in the GNAC, but we won our conference championship. What conference? Back then. It was like the NECC.
Okay. So, how did you guys over your 4 years? Like, mm-hmm. How many times did you guys go to the tournament? How many championships did you guys get?
So we went to the championship 3 years.
Okay.
So freshman year we won, sophomore year we lost.
In the championship?
Yep. Okay. Junior year we also lost in the championship. And then senior year we made it to the semis.
Okay. So the first experience in the NCAA tournament, or first and only, was freshman year?
Yes. We went to Ithaca.
And Ithaca is I remember watching Ithaca play Geneseo, because the girls team was playing before, and Ithaca looked unbelievable.
Yeah.
They were a good team when you guys were... When you played them in the tournament?
Yes, absolutely.
They're perennially a very good basketball program?
Yes, back then, yes. And we were also, so we were in a bracket with like Bowdoin as well. Okay. And yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As your career sort of panned out in college basketball, did you ever set your sights on becoming a pro or no?
I thought about playing overseas at one point.
Mm-hmm. And what made you decide not to?
Or
the,
did you decide
the real
to,
conversations really that I had with family and my coach at the time, like, yeah,
more real people around you.
Yes.
And what did you after basketball? You had amazing. Before we talk about after basketball, one more, I guess, Elms basketball related question.
Mm-hmm.
So you're all time leading scorer, like we said a couple of times, all time leading rebounder. You must have had some pretty big games. Mm. Is there any like moments when you were playing or any big games that you want to share with our audience?
Mm.
Maybe your favorite game doesn't have to be maybe your most scoring, but. So maybe actually, you were like in the zone or killing.
Yes. So freshman year, there was this post player on Newberry College. Like, she played for Newberry.
Okay. Is that in Boston?
It used to be, yes. They no longer are opened. Okay. But she was mobile though. Like, she was solid. She was like 6 foot. And I remember we played them at, so we used to play every team twice. Mm-hmm. And we played them at Newberry and we lost. So here we are going to the semifinals. And we're like, fast forward, we're going to semifinals, we're playing Newberry. And I'm like, I'm gonna outwork this girl. Like, we used to do game goals. And I remember being like, I'm gonna grab every rebound today. Like, that was like, because obviously I'm 5'7, she's 6 foot. I gotta really work hard to get every rebound, right? So at the end of the game, apparently I ended up having 27 and 27.
Damn.
So goodness. I'm like,
damn.
Yeah, like that was really the mindset. Like, and that's why anyone listening, I will always say, like, if you know that you can do something, no one can ever take that away from you. It has to come from within. It can't be external. It has to be internal.
Mm-hmm. Being a great rebounder throughout your career, is that something you brought active attention to, or is that just like a natural ability you have? Because it's not usually like, it's pretty weird for someone to be like really good at rebounding unless mm-hmm. they just want it. Like someone like Sam, who's just huge, he's naturally good at rebounding. But there's also people like Aaron. TC, who's like 5'7", who also grabs a bunch of rebounds. That's like a mental thing that you have to add to the game.
I think it's a combination of both, right? It goes back to being the tallest one, and then I'm naturally just rebounding, right? So then over time, it's like understanding that rebounding is one of the most important pieces of the game. Mm-hmm. But people sleep on it a lot.
It's like, not attractive to get
exactly,
20 rebounds.
Exactly,
so
it's exactly.
Like inflation, I guess. Like before, she was bigger than everybody, so now she's getting all the rebounds. Now she's not bigger than anybody, but she's used to getting all the rebounds, so now she has to do other things mm-hmm. to get those same
exactly, rebounds. Exactly.
So then as you came out of your college basketball career, what was life looking like for you?
Mm. So luckily, I had conversations with my coach my junior year about what I wanted to do next, and I said coaching. Because I didn't want to give up the game, obviously be connected. Most coaches, that's why they get into it. They love it, and they don't want to take a step back or whatever. And so we had a lot of real conversations. So I applied for a lot of GA positions. Fast forward, here I am now, fall of 2015, coaching at Newberry. And that was exciting. Like, I was an assistant coach part-time. Like, so I'm literally driving 50 minutes one way every day to coach, but it's because I wanted to really be involved in it. So
are you doing anything So you said you were doing part-time coaching. Are you doing anything else?
Yes. All the time? Yes, I'm working full-time at my former high school that I went to.
Okay. Yeah, as a coach or just as a teacher?
No. So I was like, you ever heard of a para? It's no. So it's pretty much like you assist the teacher in the classroom. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then were there some things as a GA that you picked up from the being the assistant coach there? Like you just watching the coaches coach?
Yeah. So I learned a lot. We actually went to the championship that year, which was like the first in program history. We had the rookie of the year on the team. So I was able to work. She was a post player. So I worked closely with her. But I learned a lot about like, oh, wait, there's a lot that goes into it. But I think in that moment, at the time, I knew I just wanted to be in coaching. But seeing the like seeing and working with the head coach, I'm like, actually, I think this is what I ultimately may want to do. Mm-hmm. Right. So
I think we skipped over this before mm-hmm. we just kind of continue on the coaching route. Mm-hmm. What is your player kind of final resume look like with in terms of awards, in terms of, I think our audience would be interested to know that.
Elaborate, like.
Did you win GNOC Players of the Week? Did you win GNOC Player of the Year? Did you win All-American, All-Region, type of stuff like that? Or even, yeah. I don't know how extensive the awards were when you were
playing. A lot.
Yeah?
Come on. I'm just kidding.
How it's evolved. I know now there's an award for everything.
Yeah, so like freshman year, rookie of the year in the conference, rookie of the year, ECAC, rookie of the year. ECAC, we didn't even play in, it's like the NIT?
Oh, yeah.
It's like that for Division III, but we didn't even play in that. And then I also got like the NUBA Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
Junior year, Player of the Year in conference, sophomore year, All-Regional Team, fourth, and then junior year, All-Regional Team, third, and then senior year, All-Regional Team, second, and then also Player of the Year. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome.
So, yeah.
So before the podcast, you said you had two assistant coaching jobs before you got to Elms?
Correct.
How did you end up getting those jobs?
Yeah, so that's why I say Elms was where I needed to be, right? So Newberry, whatever, coached. Then I took the year off. I was coaching at the high school. I coached like the freshman team. But I'm like, no, I need to be at the college level. So that summer, this was 2017. The summer of 2017, I reached out to my coach who was at Anna Maria at the time as an athletic director. And I basically said, like, I wanted to get back into college coaching. And I was thinking about applying to some other schools. And then she was like, if you wait, there's a position opening up at Clark. I think you would be a great fit for it, whatever. So at the time, so the summer before that, so I didn't even tell you all, I had applied for a job at Holy Cross and I did not get it. Okay. So I was a little discouraged. Like, you're going to have failure in life, but they say, man's rejection is God's redirection, whatever. And whatever. So I'm at Clark in Worcester again. So Holy Cross is in Worcester. So I'm at Clark again in Worcester. And I'm like nervous. I had an interview, whatever. They call me in for the second round. And then the head coach meets me in the lobby. And I'm like so nervous. But I didn't know what I was walking into. So basically my college coach was connected to Clark. Like she went to Clark, but that's not why I got the job. Like she knew about the position, so that's how I landed that role, I guess you could say. Like, I knew of it because she was my network piece.
She made you aware of, like, the opportunity type thing.
Yes, and then from there, I met my mentor, who is amazing. She was there for 38 years, and I learned so much from her. Talk about being a sponge. I was a sponge, and I consumed as much as I could.
Mm-hmm. You said you... Just like you were at the high school level and then you decided you wanted to coach the college level. What was it about the high school level that you just said, I can't coach this anymore?
I don't know. I just, when you know, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, I just knew I belonged at the college level.
Okay. And then, so you said you learned a lot.
Because I always wanted to be at the college level. Mm-hmm.
You said you learned a lot from that mentor. Are there specific sort of coaching skills that you picked up from her or him?
Her? Yes. Yeah, I think for her, she's very growth oriented and she has instilled that into me even to this day. She's always like, when we check in, it's like, where are you at? Like, what are you doing? Like, you can't stay stagnant. Like, there's always opportunity to grow and be better, right? And just how she relates to people. Like, she taught me a lot about how to relate to people and building relationships with people, because that is what ultimately in coaching is going to get your players to go through a wall, is the relationships that you have with them.
Sure.
So,
and then after you, so how long were you in that job?
I coached at Clark for 5 years.
And then why did you decide to leave? And where did you go?
So my mentor retired And I was at a crossroads in my career, and I actually went for the job there, did not get it, but I also had other things in the works. And so I stayed on as a first-year success advisor. So that's, I don't know if y'all know this, but I also do academic coaching here. So that's like where all my experience came through, like working with the first years at Clark. And then like, I thought I was done with coaching, to be honest. I was like, I'm just gonna walk away. And then September 2022, the Worcester State coach, this is a true story, by the way, and I know I've been talking a lot, but this is
that's
a true
point of a podcast. That's
the whole point of it.
This is a true story. Like, this is why I was like, I believe in like manifest and all that. So I'm sitting in my office. It's like first week of September, and I'm like, this is the time of the year, because when you've been doing something for so long, you that becomes like your routine, and right. So it's like the time of the year we're starting to gear up basketball season. I'm like, I'm gonna miss it, man. I wish I was coaching, right? Literally the next day, I get an email from the Worcester State head coach. She's like, I must have sent this to the wrong email yesterday, but a position just opened up. Are you interested in being my assistant? And I'm like, absolutely. Like, you know, like in my mind, I'm like, yes. Yeah. So, you know, and from there, I coached for her and it was amazing. Also a coach who has been in it for 30 years. So I learned a lot from her as well. So.
It's interesting you say that, because I've listened to a few podcasts with Gilbert Arenas, and he said that first year he had left the NBA, like the June would roll around, and his body was just like ready to play basketball. So he'd find himself like driving for hours just to take his mind off of stuff because he had nothing to do. He'd been playing basketball for 25 years, and now you can't, so your body just doesn't know what to do.
Right, right.
Is there anything? I'm sure there is. So what are the things that you picked up from the people who, I guess, were like the head coaches when you were at all these various schools before you came to Elms that you kind of brought over to the program this year?
Maybe the things that made them successful, like the programs, because they were both very successful programs. So what do you think the things were that they did that made them successful?
Yeah, and then what are you, and then, yeah, how are you bringing that over to here?
I think the connections that they build with their players is what made them successful. I coached with Coach Glissman for 5 years, and in her early days, she had 36-0 seasons. And that's not just because they were good. Yes, she had some talented players, but she also developed them as players. And I think that's important, right? When you're putting in that, when you're investing into your athletes, they understand, okay, coach may be tough from time to time, but I know it's coming from a good place and I know she cares, right? So, and I could say that same thing at Worcester State, like the time commitment that these coaches, they taught me work ethic, like how hard they go so hard for their programs. Like my players would be this year, they were like, coach, you're in the office, is the lights on at midnight? Yes, I'm working hard. You got to work hard, right? But I would say those are the two things that really stuck out, was like the relationship building and developing and establishing those connections with your athletes.
So what are you doing to build connections with your athletes now that this is an opportunity for you to be the head coach and now you have your own team?
I mean, I would hope that they know that they can come in and talk about anything, whether that's life, they want to talk about hoops, whatever it is, like I'm here to help them because I care about them as a whole, not just as a basketball player. It's bigger than that.
For sure.
So
when did you end up leaving the Worcester State job and end up here?
So another true story. I'm literally driving down Park Ave. This is a road in Worcester, whatever, going to work. And I don't know why I was thinking about this, but so my senior year, one of my teammates who coached with my coach at Dean last year, we were in the gym, whatever, and we were having a conversation, and Michelle had just got the job. And I remember being like, what's your dream job? And she was like, to be an accountant. And then I'm like, okay. And she asked me what mine is. I was like, to be the head coach here. And she was like, really? That's not my dream, blah, blah, blah. So I don't know why that, like, I was thinking about that. And literally the next day, Michelle reached out to me and she was like, hey, D, like, I know your team's on the way to the semifinals, but I wanted to talk to you about something. And I was like, yeah, sure. So we get on the phone and she's pretty much telling me that she wants me to come back and take over. So that happened within a 2-day span. So that's how I ended up here.
Did you have a direction? Like, what did the program look like before you got here?
What do you, like?
In terms of culture and things like that, like, were they good before you got here or no?
I guess that's up for interpretation.
Like, what was their record? Really, is really what I'm asking.
Last year, they were 9-16.
And your record this year was?
10-15.
Increase. So when you came in here, what was your goals for the program when you got here is really what I'm getting at.
Ultimately to have an impact on them, to give them a good experience. Like, I know that coming in here was going to be a challenge. I have been a head coach, but it was by default, I would say that. But this was like the real opportunity to like do it and take over and instill some of my values and what I think a culture should look like, right? Mm-hmm. And that doesn't happen overnight. And to be successful, mm-hmm. ultimately be successful.
Another one of the things that I'm curious about, and I've asked other coaches this too, is how do you think your perspective on the game changed from being a player to a coach? Because I know like when you're viewing the game as a player, you're really only worried about your role. And mm-hmm. when you switch to be a coach, now you have to worry about everybody on the yeah. floor. So it really, how has that affected you and how do you think that changed your perspective?
Yeah, I remember the first time that I stepped into coaching, I was like, I never played the guard position. Yes, I was a shifty post player or whatever, but that was something that I knew was a weakness of mine. So I took day in and day out, I would study like, how would you coach a point guard or a shooting guard or whatever? And I put a lot of time into that, mm-hmm. that now that I would say that I'm confident in that. And then when it comes to post, like that's just like secondhand nature to me, right? So just seeing it as a whole, right? And figuring out what it is that is important to you as a coach. Like, what are your non-negotiables? And then also, what is your philosophy? For me, I would say I learned from someone who was very defensive-oriented, and I'm a very defensive-oriented coach. And then rebounding just came from my ability to do that as a player, so I adapted that into my coaching philosophy. Mm. So,
on the defensive side of things, I'm assuming this is going to lead into my next question, which is, what is your coaching pet peeve? Because last year, Madai, our coach absolutely hated turnovers. We got a turnover rack, and he just couldn't stand turnovers. I'm assuming yours is probably defense based on what you just said.
Yeah, I would say big pet peeve is we're playing defense and we give second and third opportunities. Like we're
on
not
the offensive glass.
Yes. Yes. It just burns me to the core. Like we need to box out. Like it's that simple, right?
And that's an effort stat too. Where it's yes. Like you don't need to scale the box. It's just pure effort. Yes. You just don't want to get the rebound.
Yes, absolutely.
How are you going about recruiting for this offseason now being that, I mean, were you doing recruiting as an assistant coach at your previous schools?
Yep, I was the recruiting coordinator for both.
And then how are you kind of taking that over to now you're recruiting for yourself and your program? Mm-hmm. So what are your, I guess, tactics? What types of players are you trying to recruit?
What are you looking to address?
Yeah, what are you looking for?
Well, first, if you out there and you listening, you got to be able to defend, right? I could develop a player offensively, but if you can't defend, it's going to be extremely hard for you to be on that court consistently. Like, you got to be able to do that consistently. And then the other piece is character. Like, I want good people in this program, right? Character, coachable. Don't take too much personally because I can be a lot sometimes, but it's coming from a good place. So, I've been having real conversations with prospects in the process. Like, listen, I may ride you from time to time, but understand it's because I'm trying to make you better.
You're probably the seventh coach you've had on here, and it's a pretty consistent theme that, like, if anyone was, like, trying to guess what would be inside a college coach's mind, it's pretty consistent that, like, they want defense and they want a good character. Like, we haven't heard a single word about offense. I need you to hit a step back, all this stuff. It's, like, defense and character is, like, the internals of what they need as a college basketball player, which I think is not really being talked about with younger kids.
Our previous coach had saying that he would say he's trying to build a team that he's comfortable losing with in the sense of, like, yeah, obviously winning is very important, but if you have a group of guys that care about each other and is a family and treat each other with respect and create a positive environment, then yeah, losing sucks, but losing is bearable if you do it with people you care about.
Yeah, because in that process, when you have those people that you're doing it with, like, you're like, wait, we learning so much more from the losing than we do winning.
For sure.
Right, but it's hard, it's uncomfortable to lose because most people look at it as like, damn, I failed. How could I possibly have failed? Like, I tried my hardest, but we still failed, right? Instead of soaking it in and sitting with that and be like, wait, how can I be better the next time? Mm-hmm. Because losing is really an opportunity for that. And that's the same thing with life. Like, I just told y'all about a couple of opportunities where I did not get the job, but that didn't steer me away from staying true to the vision. I knew eventually it was going to happen. I just didn't know how.
Another thing I'm curious about is I've watched a lot of really high level basketball teams, and a common theme with them I've seen is they're very, very disciplined, and they don't dribble a lot, and they don't do it like whatever the coach's plan is, they stick to it to a T. What do you think the ingredients are of a really successful women's basketball team?
Ooh, you look at South Carolina. Yeah, I was following the tournament.
More than the men's tournament.
You know what made them good?
I know that they're had a girl who averaged 8 blocks a game.
Aside from Cardoso.
I know that. So from watching them, it just looked like they... I mean, I watched mostly just the tournament, so I don't really know any of the things going on behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. But it just looked like they had dogs. It just looked like they had people going for every offensive rebound, crashing the glass, running in transition, people playing roles, positive. It looked they had positive energy on the court. Mm-hmm. And then obviously they had probably going to be the second overall pick who averaged, 14-9. Like, that's pretty hard, especially in women's basketball, to have a 6'8" post player. And I think that it also seems like their coach really cares deeply about, not even just basketball, but they're individuals, mm-hmm. and seems like a good person. And so
Dawn is
probably
the best.
A lot of buy-in from her team as well, which kind of creates that environment that we were just talking about, which fosters a lot of growth.
Yeah, yeah. You're spot on. I think watching them, you don't you have Cardoso who's averaging 14-14, but you also had throughout the tournament, somebody was stepping up at different moments. It wasn't just Cardoso. Right. It was
she only averaged 14 points.
They played, right. So they played, but they played a lot of team basketball offensively and defensively. Mm-hmm. I mean, look what they did versus Caitlin Clark.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was hard for her to score in that second half of the game. 100%. Right. They made adjustments. They were switching people on and off of her. And then you had Johnson who really stepped up. So when you say the ingredients to a good basketball team, I mean, that's the team that I'm tapped into, not because they had a winning season, but also something Max has just said is Dawn Staley is one of the greatest to ever do it, if you ask me. Because of that, building the relationships with the people and the buy-in that they have because they know, wait, she cares. She cares about us. You, if we were to go to a South Carolina practice, I guarantee you it's not easy.
Hell no.
It's not easy, right? But they share the ball well. There's people who are going to step up at different moments because they know they have to.
It was an energy to watching really high level and really simple basketball that I just love. It was Trinity and UConn, which they're not exactly comparable, but they kind of are in the same sense. Because Trinity, they were in our gym before they played us, and they knew they were going to smoke us. But they were in there an hour and a half before the game, practicing their plays, full speed.
Our plays,
practicing their plays, full speed, full.
Now that's different.
That's
practicing our plays.
They're in
on
there
our court an hour and a half before the game,
full speed. Coaches yelling, everyone's locked,
knowing
in.
That they don't have to do that, and they would probably beat us because they have Division I level.
And you watch the game, too, and they're just swing, open three. And, I watched UConn in the NCAA tournament, too. Their shit is really simple. There's not a lot of dribbles. Their coach just sits there and watches them run through the plays. It just looks really simple, and I love watching that level of basketball.
Right, yeah.
Going back to women's basketball and Caitlin Clark, obviously a very big topic right now. By the way, we talk about Caitlin Clark. They held her to what she had 30, which is crazy.
She's always going to end up with 30.
That the fact that it's holding someone is that good that – locking them up is having them as a semi-efficient 30, which is insane. But I've seen a lot of stuff in the last few days about, this is completely off topic, but sometimes we do that. Sometimes we talk about current events as well. I feel like Caitlin Clark is getting a lot of hate after the tournament. Maybe it's also from, WNBA players or people who, from my opinion, might be jealous of the success that she has had and could potentially continue to have. And what are your kind of thoughts on Caitlin Clark and her future and what's going on.
The impact she's had on women's basketball.
I think the impact that she has had on women's basketball is very respectable. You can't take that away from her. She's done things that people have not done ever, right? She's broken many records. She's a phenomenal athlete, if you ask me. I don't really know the hate because I don't really tune into it. But
I just saw something. It was Diana... something with a T, her last name.
Taurasi?
Diana Taurasi.
Wait, time out. How do you not know Diana Taurasi?
I don't know. I know who that is.
She is a GOAT.
But I don't know how to pronounce her last name.
She's a GOAT. Three championships with UConn women's basketball.
I know that. But I know. So she's made a couple comments about how Caitlin Clark looks fabulous compared to 18-year-olds. Now she's going to play grown women basketball versus pros and it's not going to be so sweet or something like that. And then just also, there was also another person who also made a couple who played, was a very, very high level college basketball player.
I think they have a little podcast together.
It was a older woman who played for Kansas before the NCAA took over women's basketball, and she was talking about how like Caitlin Clark didn't actually break the record and
some other stuff. Yeah.
But yeah, Caitlin Clark's a dog. I saw this thing that was Caitlin Clark's a top five basketball influence player all time.
But that's the thing that she brings that other people have not brought to the game. And I could say that is like the media.
Yeah, for sure.
She's bringing all of the hype or whatever, right? For sure. But I think back to your point, like Diana Taurasi is probably speaking from experience because she was a dog in college.
For sure.
She was that person you wanted to be, right? So then when she went to the WNBA, it probably was like a reality check, like, whoa, they're faster, they're stronger, they're quicker. So that is going to be an adjustment for Caitlin Clark. I don't necessarily think she's trying to like dim what she's done.
More think it's just like a friendly,
like mentor, like helping her prepare. It's gonna be harder.
Yeah,
so you're gonna have to put in three times the work that you did to be as good as you were in college.
I don't think it's hate. It's more of just like being a mentor and just being real, like being honest. That's interesting. But yeah, I said like Allen Iverson, Steph Curry, LeBron James, Michael Jordan and Caitlin Clark are the top five most basketball influential people.
I wouldn't disagree with that at all.
Wow.
I think that's a pretty accurate list. Because you think about just this last 2 years alone, the amount of attention that Caitlin Clark has brought to women's basketball is just like insane. It's literally like Allen Iverson brought to like the swagger to men's basketball. Like Steph Curry brought like the three-point shot.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I think what she's done for the game is great. And if that gets people watching, keep watching.
What does your life look like outside of basketball? Now we've bogged down for 45 minutes of straight nonstop basketball. What does it look like outside of basketball?
Any hobbies?
Oh, nope.
No hobbies?
Nothing? No.
No? Really?
No.
It's a grind.
This has to... Okay, so right now I'm coaching AAU. So I'm
back-to-back coaching. So you went straight out of college basketball coaching into AAU coaching.
Yeah, so I'm coaching ninth graders.
I don't know if you can do that.
I'm coaching ninth and 11th graders. And last weekend I coached a total of 8 basketball games.
That's draining.
Yes, it is.
Last episode with Southall, he said that coaching in high school and AAU is more of a dictatorship, whereas college is a partnership. Do you agree with that, disagree with that?
I could see that.
In what sense?
I kind of want to hear from them. I think who you are as a coach is not going to change regardless of your quote unquote audience. Like you're going to stay true to who you are. Like I'm asking them like, what could we do better? Right. Cause most of them want to play at the next level. So it's like having those conversations with them now to prepare them to also learn, which is something that I'm very big on, is finding your voice and speaking your truth. So teaching them this now is going to set them up for that next level, I think.
You seem to have a really high level of intensity, and you kind of remind me of the coach we had at Madai, where he was a nonstop go-go guy. He'd be up at 12 drinking beer, sending us like videos and iMessage talking about how I'm watching film from 3 days ago and all this stuff. Do you think that level of intensity is you were born with it, or it was sort of instilled into you along the way, and do you think it's possible for you to instill it into other people?
I think it was – I guess who you are as a player kind of – will show up in who you are as life, right? Like it's the same thing concept what I was saying before, who you are is who you are. But I do think my mentors instilled in me the work ethic it's gonna take to be a head coach at this level specifically. And I definitely think I could have that influence or impact someone else to understand, hey, if this is what you wanna do, this is what it's gonna take. Mm-hmm. So.
That's all I got right now, if you wanna ask here.
We usually finish our podcast off by just asking, what's one piece of advice you'd give to your younger self?
Be gentle, kind, and trust the process.
Okay. Thank you.
Simple to the point.
Thank you for your wisdom.
What color is the dress?
No, I forgot to ask Southall another question for the next episode, but we can text him afterward. See what the question would have been.
Awesome.